Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a call-in for Iranian Americans. I'm guessing that we have enough of you listening to do a call-in of your own, I hope, and I wonder if you might have some special insights for the rest of us or just some unique between-the-two-worlds points of view about the growing U.S.-Iran standoff. What does Iran want? What should the United States do? Iranian Americans, call us at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Of course, the latest wrinkle are these Seymour Hersh and Washington Post reports in the last day. Seymour Hersh and The New Yorker saying the U.S. is developing various military plans, including even a so-called bunker buster nuclear attack option, according to Hersh, on any Iranian nuclear program sites. So since these are based on leaks by anonymous sources, someone wants us to be talking about this today. One of our guests last hour suggested it might be opponents of a military strike trying to whip up opposition before any such planning gets too far. And I'll read part of the Washington Post article that would suggest that in a minute. But in any case, Iranian Americans, if you're out there, give us a call. In your opinion, what does Iran want? What does the U.S. want? What should either country do about the growing enmity? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I suspect that many Iranian Americans listening right now are not at all sympathetic to the current religious right regime of Ahmadinejad. Much Iranian immigration to the U.S., I'm aware, has been fueled by feeling threatened by various regimes. It happened during the Shah's reign once upon a time. It happened during the Ayatollah's reign. It's happening now. But how afraid do you think the U.S., or for that matter, Israel, with what Ahmadinejad has said about wiping it out, should be? And what should the United States do? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Iranian Americans this morning. And as your calls are coming in, a little bit of that Washington Post article on this, since many of you in our area don't actually see the Washington Post, and this was not in the Times. Headline, U.S. is studying military strike options on Iran, from yesterday's Post. Any mix of tact threats alarms critics is the subhead. And it says the Bush administration is studying options for military strikes against Iran as part of a broader strategy of coercive diplomacy to pressure Tehran to abandon its alleged nuclear development program, according to U.S. officials. And here's how they describe those unnamed sources: U.S. officials and independent analysts. Now I'm going to skip down a few paragraphs because this gets to what the motivation might be of some of the people leaking to the Post and to Seymour Hersh. And in fact, it kind of appears to be that there's dissension within the administration. And some people within are viewing the amount of military preparation going on with some alarm. So it says many military officers and specialists, however, view the saber rattling with alarm. A strike at Iran, they warn, would be at best just a delay on its nuclear program by a few years, but could inflame international opinion against the United States, particularly in the Muslim world and especially within Iran, while making U.S. troops in Iraq targets for retaliation. And then it quotes someone on the record, Corey Shockey, who worked on President Bush's National Security Council staff and now teaches at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And Corey Shockey says, My sense is that any talk of a strike is the diplomatic gambit to keep pressure on others if they don't help solve the problem. But others believe it is more than bluster. Kurt Campbell, a former Pentagon official, says the Bush team is looking at the viability of airstrikes simply because many think airstrikes are the only real option ahead. So, again, whoever's off the record leaking us apparently wants us to question whether that is the only real option ahead. So call in for Iranian Americans, 212-433-WNYC. And Nassim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling in.
No problem. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay. How are you doing?
Okay, so I'm the child of Iranian immigrants. I've never actually been to Iran.
Uh-huh.
My family is Baha'i, so it's not really safe for us. But I don't feel like I have a great deal of political expertise on whether the nuclear program is actually a threat or not. I just wanted to speak a little bit to the psychology of the situation.
Absolutely.
From what I understand, just from growing up in my cultural community and being exposed to family members who live there and people who've been back to Iran frequently, I think that the populace in Iran is generally a-religious. I think that the ruling theocracy tends to be very extremist and to have very fanatical rhetoric. But I think, by and large, the population of Iran is not especially Muslim, and they're not really amenable to the kind of constrained, restricted life that they live.
So how did Ahmadinejad get elected?
Well, I think that a lot of that is just kind of a reactionary attitude to what's going on. I think that people tend to be actually very Anglophilic, and they would like more freedom. They desire a free society. I think after the revolution, there was a great deal of discontent with what it actually turned out to be. People weren't really expecting the type of Islamic Republic that formed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what people have been living under for the last quarter century is kind of, it's breeding more of, I guess, a desire for Western culture and that kind of freedom. And I think that it's important for the U.S. to be aware of that in their policies and in their stances that they take towards Iran, to not alienate them further.
Right. And
there's kind of an interesting window here.
And there's certainly been no shortage of guests for us to get on the program, for example, who are from the Iranian, more from the intellectual or educated classes of Iran, who are not at all happy with that religious right drift. I don't know what percentage of the population that represents, but how do you think that whole domestic theocracy psychology angle intersects, if it does, with the question of nuclear weapons and Iran's foreign policy?
Well, from what I understand, I think it's something like 70% of the population is under the age of 30. And I think that people are very open to change at this point, and they would like to see their lives take a turn for the better. I don't think that they're enjoying their lives as much as they could be, and they're very much aware of that because of media, especially. I don't know if you're aware, but I think Persian is now the fourth most common blogging language in the world.
Or wow.
It's now, I think, tied with French, and it may even have moved up in the rankings since I checked last. I think people are very much aware of what kind of life they could have and what kind of life they don't have due to the government. And I don't think that they have the kind of religious zeal to substantiate the restrictions that they're living under. And I think when the U.S. comes down with a heavy hand with respect to the nuclear policy or anything else, I think that alienates a huge contingent of the population.
It throws
that
people
could actually
in.
Be very favorable for U.S. policy.
Nassim, I'm going to move on, but thank you so much. It was really interesting and insightful. And here is a self-identified Iranian blogger, Horshid and Paramus. You're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
Brian, I just wanted to start by saying what I find very troubling is the use of the word Iran and Iranians whenever there's talk of the Islamic Republic. Let us please, I beg the U.S. media, U.S. journalists, to distinguish between Iranians and Islamic Republic. Iranians are not Islamic Republic. Islamic Republic is not a representative of the Iranian people. And the U.S., I'd like to add that the U.S.
Whoops, did we lose you? Go ahead.
With people who are not our representatives. U.S. should support democracy in Iran, and if decides to somehow negotiate with the mullahs to appease them, it will make a mockery of the whole war of terror, war on terror. And
So if I accept your premise that the regime there is not the legitimate representative of the people, then and they continue to develop nuclear programs, what is it that you want the United States to do?
I do not see any other option besides regime change, Brian. Even if they take out their nuclear facilities, which I very much doubt if they can do that, given the consequences, I think long-term, the best option, the only option, is regime change. If you take out their facilities, they have hidden ones. They may restart another other underground facilities. And
What is regime change? Is it occupation Iraq style or something else?
Absolutely not. I think recently there's talk of the State Department giving the $75 million, $80 million to so-called opposition. I don't know what they mean by that.
Yes, in fact, and I'm going to have to let you go in a minute because your line is so bad, but part of the scenario that Seymour Hersh lays out is that the U.S. hope is that by launching some limited military strikes on suspected Iranian nuclear facilities, that it would then help to turn Iranians against the regime, and they would affect the regime change. But our last caller seemed to be indicating that if the U.S. does something like that, she thinks people will psychologically wind up aligning with this regime that they don't really support against the United States because they're being attacked.
There is something definitely true about the what your last caller said, Brian. But I would like to say that the Seymour Hersh piece, in my opinion, it basically comes from a group within the U.S., a section within the U.S., who is for appeasement. I consider the article by Hersh totally exaggerated. I do not believe the U.S. intends to attack Iran at all. That is my opinion.
Murshid, thank you very much for
the
call.
Thank you so much, Brian.
We really appreciate it. And Behzad in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for getting my call. A question is that, the issue of Iranian. I'm in this country for the past 35 years almost, and I see both sides of the issue, and the saddest part is when anytime talking about Iranian-American relationship, it seems the Iranian-American relationship started after hostages. It's a long time before that. It was a relation between Iran and the United States, good or bad. Days are bad, days are good. And most of the media probably tried to forget in 1953 military coup in Iran, whatever it was happened after that. Most Iranian, I can tell you, I know many of them, they're not religious. And you can tell them by just one simple fact, every other Muslim country in this country, they have a mosque. Opening a mosque, Iranian mosque in this country, almost impossible.
Oh, you mean there isn't an Iranian?
It's not. They have some religious organization.
You mean in that country?
In this country, yeah, in United States.
Oh, that you're saying Iranian Americans don't tend to go to mosque?
Absolutely. Okay.
Because of the nature of the people who emigrate from Iran?
No, most of them, even Iranian people in Iran, they were same more or less. Islam actually is to some degree, came to Iran before. We had our own religion back, thousands of years ago, and they came in.
So then how do you explain the ascendance of Ahmadinejad?
I think it was because between two choices they had, between Rafsanjani and Ahmadinejad, people choose somebody that's more popular and more people person. Rafsanjani was more like, from old aristocrat, the rich person, and the people said, we had from him, let's go somebody else.
So how much of a threat do you think that government is to the United States or to other countries in the region?
Not a threat at all. I think just more talk, and not that is more bark, not a bite. The Iranians like to talk, but in reality, just they're not going to have, any kind of, Iran hasn't attacked any country in past 250 years. It's not the nature of them, even. I can tell you that they're not, aggressive people. That's the nature of.
Well, that may be in the, in the populace, but again, there's the government, which all the callers so far have said doesn't really represent the populace. What if they did have a nuclear weapon?
I doubt it. Just for what I can see.
You think it's not, just bluster?
They're not that stupid to do such this thing. Yeah. Because they know if they attack another country with a nuclear weapon, what's going to happen to you. It's just they know that's consequence of the things. They're just why they have to do such this thing. There is no really reason for them to attack another country. What are the country attacking?
Behzad, I'm going to move on. Thank you very much for your call. And our next call in the Bronx identifies himself as Dr. Daryani, president of the Iranian American community in New York. Dr. Daryani, hi.
Yes, good morning, Brian. I'm sorry, I have to correct you. The office is located in Bayside, New York.
Oh, Bayside. Okay, sorry, I have it as the Bronx. So what is this organization?
Well, we represent a wide variety, mass spectrum of the Iranian-American communities in New York. Recently, during Ahmadinejad's visit to New York, we had a rally of 9,000 Iranian-American dissidents here.
Mm-hmm.
In April 28, again, we have a big demonstration in front of the UN. We represent this community only because they want to reach out to the Security Council. A message very very strong that the community here are very concerned about the nuclear threat from the Iranian regime. Iranian regime do not represent our people, nor here, nor in Iran. Iran must not be faced with a military solution, nor with appeasement policy. As the president elected by the resistance have spoken in the European Parliament today, said there is a third solution that by supporting the opposition, legitimate opposition Iranians who are in Iran and outside, this alone will eliminate sending our Marines to get killed or get tangled up in more military mess in Iran.
Explain that further. What is that third option? What
third
would it involve?
Many of the think tanks in Washington right now are lobbying about this, that there is a strong opposition called NCR, armed with equipment as heavy as tanks, and their solution is not military, but they want simply be recognized as the very powerful resistance in Iran and outside, which has enough power to overtake the Iranian regime.
How?
As long as...
How? Through what means?
Okay. For example, 182 members of Congress signed a petition in support of this resistance. The resistance is obviously...
it's political.
Physically?
No, it's political. It's not an armed resistance. It's a political resistance.
Of course, it is.
Yes.
As a lot of
and
political support.
We have 20 seconds left. So how can the West empower this resistance?
It's very simply because the people, National Council of Resistance represents this movement, and all we need to do is to show sign. To stand strong against this, for this regime, and not to stop at this level. Continue a technological sanction and diplomatic sanction, and support the Iranian voice throughout the resistance.
And Dr. Dayani, that has to be the last word. So thanks to you, and thanks to all the Iranian Americans who called. Very illuminating, I think, for the other listeners. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Talk to you tomorrow.